BFM.
It's really softened up and it's gone smooth.
Good morning, Minister Collins.
Oh, good morning, Johnny. You can call me Judith.
Thank you, Judith. Now, this morning you are joining us to chat about the multi-billion dollar boost for New Zealand's military. Can you briefly explain what the new defence capability plan is and why it's being introduced now? And how would you describe the current state of New Zealand's defence force and what challenges this new investment is aiming to address?
Right, that's quite a big tall order, but I'll do my best.
Yes.
So when I became the Minister of Defence in end of 2023, and I got a briefing for incoming minister, which is what happens, it's called a BIM, and it tells you the state of where things are at. I read that and I became actually somewhat morose and sad about what I was inheriting. So despite the fact that we have wonderful people in the Defence Force, despite the fact that everybody loves our Defence Force and all, you know, overseas, they're well respected, we had a massive problem with attrition, which means the people leaving, the number of people leaving, and we had a massive problem with so much old kit, old planes, old vehicles, old everything, that we were, a whole lot of stuff was just not able to be used. And so I thought this is a massive problem and we need to deal with it. So we set about looking at what had happened with what had been undergoing with the Defence Capability Plan, and I said, get moving on it and stop being constantly thinking that you have to buy second-hand and you have to ask Australia for it, what it's about to bury in a desert. How about we just start thinking like a real country and start putting New Zealand in a situation where we can hold our own, hold our heads up high and get out and do what we need to do.
The increase in spending and defence spending has been looming for a few years, and it seems like there's support from both sides of the political aisle for it, from both Labor and National. Yeah. But has there been enough public debate about this huge increase?
Well, I think the public's very clearly on side with this. The public, people sometimes think that the New Zealand public doesn't know what's going on, and they actually do. They don't always know the detail, but they get a pretty good sense of it. They know the world's really tough place at the moment, and you can't go 35 years of underspending and cutting defence and thinking that suddenly it's going to be able to turn up every time there's a cyclone, every time there's some issues with somebody's, you know, stuck on their kayak in the Tasman Sea, or there's volcanoes in, you know, the South Pacific that take off, including New Zealand too, by the way. And, you know, we always ask defence to go and do those jobs because they're the people who've got the skills. And you've got to be able to do that. You can't just turn up and say, you know, is a 60-year-old plane going to be the right thing for us to be using to do that? Look, last year we had, you know, we have the fourth largest search and rescue area in the world. We're a maritime nation. We had the ninth largest exclusive economic zone in the world. We have responsibilities to our Pacific neighbours and responsibilities in places like the Antarctica. Last year, we had to send a 60-year-old Hercules plane, the one that we had operating at the time, down into the Antarctic winter with our crew wearing night vision goggles to go and save an injured scientist on the ice. And you can't just do that, turn that switch on, if you're not properly trained, don't have the right kit, and so we can do some amazing things with not much, but we should do even more amazing things with a bit more. So we just can't keep, you know, cutting and thinking it's going to be okay. So
now, look, you've raised some valid points about disaster relief and medical aid. If the military upgrades are truly for disaster relief and medical aid opportunities, why do they need to be combat capable?
Well, they're not only for that. They're also to be combat capable. I mean, when our troops went into Afghanistan, they weren't out there handing out pamphlets to the Taliban. And I think it's really important that you understand that, like, you know, when Timor-Leste ended up with a major problem about 20 odd years ago, New Zealand and Australia were the people that went in there and helped sort out the independence and the safety of Timor-Leste. You can't just do this without understanding that you've got to be able to have combat capability. Now, New Zealand Defence Force people do not sign up to be civil defence volunteers. They sign up to the New Zealand Defence Force, and sometimes it's necessary for us to have that sort of lethality. And it may be a bit hard for people to think about, but ultimately, on the high seas, in the Pacific and elsewhere, there are people who operate, particularly Southeast Asia, there are pirates operating, there are people who are involved in massive drug shipments such as methamphetamine and heroin. You know, these are not nice people. And our Defence Force are the people who are asked to go in and take over those ships. So you know, you can't just do it by saying, well, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help.
In a nation that's long prided itself on diplomacy and humanitarian leadership, does doubling defence spending risk undermining those values in favour of militarisation?
Well, it's absolutely not. I mean, gosh, militarisation, I would have thought not. We're very much around making sure that we can actually hold our own. I mean, look, on that basis, we'd just go around all being social workers, but that's not what our defence force is about. I've got no problem with our defence force being able to do its job. And, you know, it helps our diplomacy enormously if we are spending the right amount of money and getting the right kit and the right training for our defence force. Suddenly, people aren't looking down on us and saying, oh, you're just a little wee teeny country with nothing much to give except some talking to us. Sometimes you go back to talking up with something a bit better, and often that is, you know, bring your planes in, bring your people in, help us with cyclones, help us with some issue somewhere. You know, you've got to actually bring something to the party. As the Prime Minister says, you can't turn up the party empty-handed.
Now, $12 billion is an astonishing amount. How do you ethically justify allocating $12 billion toward defence when essential services like healthcare and education are experiencing severe funding constraints and staff shortages?
I think you'll find that health, education, and other services like that get an enormous amount more than defence. You cannot have 35 years of cutting your defence budget down and down and down and down, and then suddenly saying, oh, no, well, what about health and everything else? The fact is, health and education, the last budget, they had record amount of money. I mean, you're talking multi-billions every year to those, as the New Zealand public expects. But I also know this, that when it's a disaster, when Cyclone Gabrielle hit, it wasn't the education teachers and others going out to save people's lives and stock and everything else. It was the Defence Force. Everyone has to play their part. New Zealand Defence Force, but I'm their minister, are going to be properly equipped and be able to do their job.
Now, with the increased defence spending, is there a risk that increased interoperability with other militaries, such as Australia or the US, could draw New Zealand into foreign conflicts, just a march to war?
Well, nobody wants to do that, do they? I mean, it's pretty clear that that's never going to be something that we're racing to do. And as for Australia, Australia is our one formal ally. We've been with Australia, we've been with the US, we've been with UK and Canada and others, such as, you know, Singapore and that. I mean, you know, when Singapore was basically kicked out of Malaysia, it was New Zealand that was in there along with the Aussies. And you've got to understand is that we work together. And so interoperability means that when something doesn't work for them, then we've obviously got something that can help them. We can work together very closely, and we do have very common interests. And if anyone thinks still that we just live at the bottom of the world and nobody knows where we are and they just leave us alone, they should think about this. Our exclusive economic zone, the ninth largest in the world, is full of seabed minerals, critical minerals, and rare earths. We have to understand that on the Ring of Fire, we are a vulnerable target, as we've seen with larger countries signing up deals around the Pacific and thinking about what they can do to take those resources of seabed. I don't want New Zealand to be in a situation that somebody just comes and takes it. I very much of the opinion that New Zealand has to always be sovereign, always has to look after itself, and always have to be prepared to do more for itself, because if we don't, no one else is going to help us should we need that help.
Judith, do we have time for one more question? I know you've got...
Yeah, sure, off you go.
All right.
Off you go.
On the increased military spending, how would you explain to a patient on a hospital wait list or a teacher in an overcrowded classroom why this investment in military spending takes precedence?
Well, it doesn't take precedence. It's simply one of the matters that the Minister of Finance has been able to fund. And you will see, as she has said on multiple occasions, that there is more funding for health, more funding for education. And defence is one of the things that we need to actually spend some big money on. The $12 billion is over 4 years. It is certainly something that is utterly needed. And when taking the defence force out of the intensive care ward unit and onto the ward. So I would say that those people waiting for operation, they also want defence to be there to help them when there's a cyclone or any other event. They know that New Zealand Defence Force has to be properly equipped, properly trained, properly crewed. Otherwise, it cannot do its critical job of helping to keep New Zealanders safe. So, yeah, I reckon they're pretty good with it too.
Okay, one last question. One last question, Judith. What is New Zealand doing in regards to promotion of global peace? Do we have a long-term global, a goal to increase peace so we can decrease defence spending?
We're not going to be decreasing defence spending. We've had 35 years of cutting defence spending, and we're now in a situation where we have to play catch-up. So the best way to have peace is to actually look like, if anyone wants to come and go across our borders, take our seabed minerals without permission, do all these sorts of things, that it may well hurt them if they do that. If anyone wants to attack our people, it has to hurt them back. So if I look at Ukraine, what was Ukraine doing that caused Russia to invade it? Number one, it was standing up for itself and making some decisions for itself. 3 and a bit years later, that country is still war-torn, and Russia did that without any reason to do so. And I do not buy the rhetoric that I've heard from some friends of China that somehow Russia, or some friends of Russia, I should say, that somehow Ukraine caused it. They did not cause it. They were innocent, going about their business. You just never know what's going to happen. Whether it's that, a volcanic eruption, earthquake, landslide, whatever, you need defence just in case.
Judith Collins, Minister for Defence, thank you so much for chatting to BFM this morning. It is much appreciated, mate. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you. What do you play after an interview like that? Some ads. Oh.